Welcome to the WEDA Connect podcast series, where we will explore all the hot topics affecting the equipment dealer industry. From industry news, government affairs, and manufacturer relations, to business best practices, technology, and marketing for equipment dealers. Brought to you by the Western Equipment Dealers Association, here to advocate, elevate, and educate. And now, let's connect.
Joining us today is John Gilliland, an international trade attorney with Gilliland and McKinney International Counselors. His experience includes serving as international trade counsel for the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance, and he is a well-recognized expert on agricultural trade issues. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks very much, Eric. It's great to be with you.
And today we're going to explore some of the trade issues affecting the North American and global agricultural market. John, international trade issues are certainly having an effect on farm equipment dealers and their customers. The news has mostly been deflating, with John Deere recently announcing 20% reduced production and layoffs in their manufacturing plants, attributing those cuts to the ongoing trade war with China. That's kind of the elephant in the room, and so maybe we should start there. Can you talk a little bit about where we're at with China and what's the outlook as of today?
Well, sure. And China is at the top of everyone's mind these days. China's senior negotiating team is in Washington this week, scheduled to be here for at least 2 days. There's been some indication they might leave early. That said, there's no genuine expectation of a major breakthrough. Optimism is fairly low. In fact, both sides have been trying to lower limitations or lower expectations rather to sort of a mini deal. It may be that even that's too much. It's hard to say at this point, but at least it's good that they're talking again. The two sides have returned to the negotiating table after essentially taking basically the summer off following breakdown of talks back in May. So there have been some new Chinese purchases of U.S. commodities in recent weeks, and that's encouraging. But other concerns are pushing the two sides further apart. In August, the U.S. announced it would impose new tariffs on nearly all remaining Chinese exports, with a major increase on the initial $250 billion, which is about half of China's exports, starting next week. Other tariffs go in stages. Some started September, and the rest are going to go into place in December. And an increase on Chinese tariffs on U.S. goods is also slated. This was part of Chinese retaliation. And then earlier this week, we've had another irritants over U.S. Concerns with Chinese human rights behavior with a Muslim minority in Western China. And the U.S. has announced it's blacklisting several Chinese entities for those reasons, and now is putting visa restrictions on Chinese officials. So all of this sort of weighs down these talks and puts further pessimism in place, and the markets are responding. So again, expectations are low. Both sides have reasons to reach a deal, but it's not looking great for the near term.
Well, that's not great news. Certainly this is something on the minds of dealers in the U.S. and Canada, and there's a lot at stake. But there's also a lot of other trade issues, and as we get into those, maybe we can tease out why this Chinese deal is important or put it in context. But first, one of the other big issues that we have is the ratification of USMCA. Despite the headlines in Washington right now, it seems that there's still many members of Congress on both sides of the aisle who understand the pressing nature of moving this forward. What are the prospects of that happening before next year's election, given the climate in Washington right now?
Well, this is a more encouraging topic. House Democrats and the Trump administration's team, led by U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer, have been engaged in genuine, serious efforts to address differences in four key areas of the agreement. Much of this is focused on Mexico, especially their labor commitments, but also general enforcement, environment, and on pharmaceuticals. Democratic leaders, including Speaker Pelosi, have in recent weeks spoken much more positively about the agreement and about their desire to get the agreement through Congress. She has appointed 9 Democrats to working groups to address each of these efforts, led by Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal of Massachusetts. And they have, as a group, publicly signaled their optimism that they can get an agreement with Ambassador Lighthizer and get this thing done this year, if possible. Just this week, a delegation of Democrats led by Chairman Neal were in Mexico to gather more information about Mexico's labor reform efforts. They've come back saying they want to see more, but the effort by itself, the trip itself, is encouraging. And so, again, optimism is rising. There have been suggestions in the media that they could even do this by Thanksgiving. The goal would be to get it done this year because, you know, for better or for worse, there is sort of a general expectation or view that passing major trade agreements during an election year gets harder. So, again, they'd like to do it before the end of the year. But optimism is rising. If you had asked me, you know, 3 months ago, I would have sounded much more pessimistic. But in spite of all the other news out of Washington, including impeachment, this is an area where it looks like efforts are on the rise. And so people are feeling better about it.
That's good news for equipment dealers. And one of the concerns we have in this USMCA, and this all sort of got kicked off new negotiations of NAFTA, with the Trump administration slapping steel and aluminum tariffs on both Canada and Mexico. That has had a significant impact on the supply of steel and the cost of steel that goes into building farm machinery. What does that look like? Is that part of the USMCA? Is it going to be a side deal? And what's sort of the, if you will, permanency of removing those tariffs?
Well, the steel aluminum tariffs, they're separate from the USMCA. They are still in place for most of the rest of the world, but as your listeners may recall, there was a deal between the three countries, United States, Canada, and Mexico, back in May to exempt Canada and Mexico from the U.S. Tariffs. The deal, again, it's distinct from USMCA, but of course the backdrop of any of these negotiations is the desire from all three countries to get back to fully normalized trade continentally. Under the deal they reached in May, the three countries are going to work together to prevent transshipment from other countries of steel and aluminum and to prevent the importation of dumped or subsidized steel. But the United States does retain the right to impose new tariffs if it deems that imports have quote unquote surged meaningfully beyond historic volumes of trade over a period of time. So there's always, of course, the risk that the United States could revert and impose those tariffs. Now, other countries have also reached deals with the United States on these tariffs. Australia has an exemption from both. Argentina has accepted quotas. And those exemptions and quotas have held. So I would say that in the near to medium term, the outlook for, again, normalized trade in these products is better. But with all things in trade now, I'd hesitate to say anything's permanent.
Certainly. Well, it sounds like at least we're heading in the right direction there. And there's other areas in the world that we're also heading in the right direction. If we return back to the Pacific Rim, recent news out of Japan that sounds good for both U.S. and Japanese consumers.
That's right, and that is good news. Just earlier this week, the United States formally signed really two agreements that it reached with Japan, and these deals are first installments towards a much broader agreement that the two sides still hope to negotiate. And so again, it's another source of encouragement. The main part of this week's agreement will bring a large portion of U.S. ag exports in line with the preferential tariff advantages that they would have already had under the TPP and that are now in effect for farmers from those other countries that remained in the agreement. And that would include, of course, farmers from Canada, but also Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, and elsewhere. And the beneficiaries for the United States are important commodities. These are pork, beef, wheat, ethanol, even wine, several specialty crops, including those grown up in the Northwest, I believe, such as blueberries and cranberries, and on the West Coast, almonds, walnuts, and to a lesser extent, dairy. The dairy sector didn't get all it hoped for, but it got significant benefits out of it. And they've said that it's a good first step. That's how they've described this agreement. But again, this is merely intended as a first installment. So it's a good start. And the hope is that at least bilaterally between the United States and Japan, the two could reach a comprehensive deal that would bring the trade between those two countries back in line where it would have been under the TPP.
Yeah, and you just mentioned the TPP, which we as the U.S. pulled out of, and this deal sort of supplants that. Are there other opportunities for bilateral trade agreements elsewhere in the Pacific Rim or around the world to supplant the TPP?
You know, not really in the foreseeable future. There's been a lot of talk. At least there had been the first couple of years of the Trump administration that the U.S. would be doing additional bilateral agreements or major deals with other countries. I think it's important to distinguish for people the difference between a comprehensive free trade agreement, which is what USMCA is, which is what the CPTPP or the TPP successor agreement is, versus smaller, more limited accords that countries often meet. And the reason I'm making that distinction is, you know, for example, this agreement with Japan that was signed this week, the agreement, the main part of the agreement with the agriculture benefits, that's not a full free trade agreement. And it's really, again, sort of an early harvest of what would become a free trade agreement. The United States is also talking with India to address some concerns the United States has in India with India's industrial policies and some other programs. That's really designed just to bring India back into U.S. trade preference programs. That's not a broader free trade agreement. In Washington, when we talk about potential FTAs on the horizon, the United Kingdom has gotten most of the attention. So there is the prospect of a deal there. The United States and British leaders have talked about doing one as soon as the Brexit is complete. We can't do one until that's done. And, of course, the situation there is very messy, as you probably know. So that's sort of on hold. And once those talks begin, there's really no certainty about how long those talks would take, how easy it would be even for the UK to accept U.S. demands. The U.S. has also been talking to the European Union itself, but that, again, has been really more of a limited focus. And in fact, those talks really haven't gone very far. They started last fall, and they were aimed more narrowly on industrial goods. The U.S. wanted agriculture to be on the table. European Union said that it could not put agriculture on the table. So until you see more of a broader scope of focus, those talks probably aren't going to go anywhere. And then there's also been some talk about a potential deal between the United States and Brazil. And that talk has really been mostly out of the Brazil side. Brazil's new government has been to Washington a couple of times and has publicly encouraged possibility of a deal between the two countries. But frankly, I don't really see that happening there. First of all, a very comprehensive agreement between the two sides would have to include some very sensitive areas, sensitive on both sides. For the United States, agriculture, you know, allowing Brazil tariff duty-free or eventually duty-free access to our agriculture markets would be a very big deal. And in Brazil, you know, dealing with industrial goods, meeting our demands on things like intellectual property, services. I just don't see that deal really happening anytime soon. So it's a long way of saying that really what we're dealing with now is Japan and getting the USMCA through, and of course hoping that we can get to some form of yes with China.
Well, John, thanks for taking us on a trip around the world and discussing all of the different trade agreements that are happening. Very insightful, and I want to thank you for your time this morning, and thank you on behalf of our listeners for sharing some of this knowledge with us.
It's my pleasure, Eric. Good to talk to you.
All right.
Typically, fall is a quiet time for legislative issues at the state level. The action is behind the scenes where bills are being drafted and coalitions are being assembled in anticipation of legislative sessions beginning in the new year. That is certainly true in Idaho, where we have been working hand-in-hand with the Idaho Farm Bureau to bring together producers, equipment dealers, and manufacturers for an equipment demonstration and discussion about right to repair. Last year, Idaho Farm Bureau released a video that dealt directly with the right to repair issue. They even had their members in the video discussing difficulties they had performing repairs. And they clearly stated their intent to introduce right to repair legislation in the 2020 legislature. Following the video, we had several meetings that led up to where we are today, with the goal being to avoid legislation by creating a dialogue and partnering with the Farm Bureau on issues that could really make a difference in increasing uptime for producers. We have two dealer demonstrations slated for Idaho in the coming weeks. The first will be held on October 23rd in Nampa at Campbell Tractor. The second will take place on November 5th in American Falls at Stotes Equipment. Both meetings will be held from 7 to 9 p.m. and other dealers are welcome to join us. A special thanks to Campbell Tractor and Stotes Equipment for hosting these events at their dealerships. The second meeting will take place the day before Idaho Farm Bureau's annual board policy meeting, where the legislative priorities for the 2020 legislative session will be set. Our hope is that we find common ground with the Farm Bureau and collaborate on things like workforce development and rural broadband that will truly make a difference on this topic.
This has been We to Connect. If you have a question, would like to suggest future topics, or just tell us what you think about the show, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at westerneda.com and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to We to Connect on iTunes. Thanks for listening. Until next time.